So we're going to continue on in the Beatitudes. And tonight we've come to Matthew 5, verse 8. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. And I'd like to read the entire Beatitudes as we've done most of the weeks, just to have them out in front of us as we contemplate their significance in our lives, as we contemplate the kingdom of heaven unfolding in our midst and unfolding in the coming, the advent of Jesus Christ. So, in the English Standard Version, seeing the crowds, he went up on the mountain, and when he sat down, his disciples came to him, and he opened his mouth and taught them, saying, Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall receive mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when others revile you and persecute you and utter all kind of evil against you falsely on my account. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward is great in heaven. For so they persecuted the prophets who were before you. So last week, I said that perhaps being merciful is the biggest challenge. And I have to admit that when I've PDF'd my sermon and when I've put in the little notes of flick to this slide here and there, I sometimes get my mind drifting to next week already and thinking, all right, so what's the next beatitude? What will I share? And when I was driving to pick up Leona to come back here, I was thinking, you know what, maybe being pure in heart is actually more difficult than being merciful, because I know what's in my mind, I know what's in my heart at times, and that is a difficult challenge. Because I'd PDF my notes, I didn't change it and still went with merciful, and is perhaps one of the most difficult ones in the context of having to extend mercy to others. Being merciful is something you can't do internally in yourself. But yeah, being pure in heart, that is definitely a challenge. So as I was thinking about this and writing this, I came to the conclusion that the Beatitudes are just difficult when we think about them in those terms. What it's difficult thinking about the kingdom of heaven, what it means to be like Christ, to be in his people and to reflect his image. The Sermon on the Mount is not easy. It's a challenge. So it's hard to say, well, this one's more challenging than that one. They're all challenging. The call that Jesus puts on our lives when we choose to follow after him. And I'd like to consider two aspects in the Beatitudes, the two sides of it, the pure in heart and then to see God. Well, the first part is being pure in heart. And the word for pure is katharos. And there's both a sacred and a profane way to understand this word, or a holy and a common way. It's a little Old Testament law humor. The common things within the Old Testament are then divided into things that are clean and then unclean. And katharos is used to specify things that are pure, things that are ritually clean, are able to be used and come in contact with, as opposed to the unclean things that were not to come in contact with. It's also used in just the generic clean, to like a clean vessel or a clean cloth, and that's how it's used in Matthew and two other instances. And often, in the background of what Jesus says is this reference and this understanding of how the words and ideas are used in the law, and how Jesus is then centering the law and centering on Torah around himself as him being the fulfillment of that and the proper understanding of what it means to be in relationship with God. Now, in context where it's pure in heart, it's often this idea of undividedness or singularity, integrity, and this is how it's used in Psalm 24, which Scott read as a call to service tonight. This being straight, being consistent with one's position, one's life, one's the way one interacts in the world. And yeah, and Jesus talks about the law. He's come not to abolish the law, but to fill them, to bring them to completion, to center around himself, to center around the person's heart, and fulfilling the law not as a checklist of clean and unclean, but in being truly one who reflects the image of who Jesus is, to be merciful people who have also receive mercy, to be those desiring justice and righteousness, and doing this with meekness and not becoming the oppressors, and comforting those who mourn, being poor in spirit, and this is the kingdom of heaven. And in many cases, Jesus provides a centering in on the true nature of Torah, a true nature of being in relationship with God, and through that with Jesus as well. And we see that through connection points in Matthew, as we highlighted last week, this proper understanding of what it means to be in relationship with God. And Jesus focuses the law around himself. And it's, if we look at Deuteronomy 6, I have my slides wrong. All right, Deuteronomy 6, 4 to 9. And this is the heart of the Torah. This is the heart of what it means to be in a relationship with God. And here he says, "Listen, O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord alone. And you must love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength. You must commit yourselves wholeheartedly to these commands that I'm giving you today. Repeat them again and again to your children. Talk about them when you are at home and when you're on the road, and when you're going to bed, and when you're getting up. Tie them to your hands and wear them on your forehead as reminders. Write them on the doorposts, your house, and your gates." The heart and the central place of Torah is this relationship with God, serving him wholeheartedly, being in relationship with him. And this is what Jesus says, come and follow him. Follow the law by following me, living in relationship with me. Be God's image bearers. And one of the lines that come out in the Torah is this: you will be my people and I will be your God. This relationship where the people reflect the image of God. And this is the true nature of the covenant, the true nature of Torah, what it means to be clean, what it means to be in relationship, what it means to be pure in heart. And before we look at a little bit more about what that means for us, I'd like to go to the second part of it and what it means to see God. And we read Psalm 24, and this is where I kind of intended to go at the beginning of the week, because there's that connection point of being pure, having clean hands and being pure in heart that comes out in the verse. And Psalm 24 is good for this, because it's the idea is the background of the ancient Near Eastern cultures, where often during New Year's festivals they would then make this processional with the king into a place of worship for whatever it was. And then there'd be a coronation of the king, and then he would be confirmed again as king as from the gods. This was very common within the ancient Near Eastern culture. So it seems like this psalm is actually reflecting some of those backgrounds and that idea of the people gathering around, asking who may join in this processional, who may follow the king. And then it turns to this point, who is this king of glory that's ushering in? And it's Yahweh, it's their Lord, Yahweh Sabaoth, the king of glory that enters into this the temple as the people then lead him there. And that's why we often read this on Palm Sunday as we reflect on Jesus entering into Jerusalem as the King of Glory, and he is revealed as the King of Glory, the one that Psalm 24 has in its foreshadowing, this processional backdrop here. But as I thought about this question, and even though Psalm 24 works well for it, is the idea of who saw God kind of stood out at the forefront to me. And this is Moses in my mind. And I think there's a few interesting points where we can reflect on to see God and what it means to see God. So we'll read Exodus 33, 18 to 23 together. That's on page 130 in your pew Bibles. And this is part of a larger context where Moses is up on the mountain for a long time, receiving the law. And he spends too long there. And the people then get impatient and wonder what happened to this guy Moses. Is he ever coming back? And then they make an idol, a golden calf, and then the people are judged for that idolatry, for rejecting that relationship with Yahweh. And then Moses intercedes for the people. He goes down on the mountain and judges them. And then he returns to Yahweh and he makes this request here. Moses responded, "Then show me your glorious presence." The Lord replied, "I will make all my goodness pass before you, and I will call out my name, Yahweh, before you. For I will choose mercy to anyone I choose, and I will show compassion to anyone I choose. But you may not look directly at my face, for no one may see me and live. The Lord continued, "Look, stand near me on this rock. My glorious presence passes by. I will hide you in the crevice of the rock and cover you with my hand until I have passed by. Then I will remove my hand and let you see me from behind, but my face will not be seen." So this is as close as anybody comes to seeing God in the Old Testament, to seeing his image, at least when they're on earth. We have Isaiah and Isaiah 6 coming up into the throne room and having an experience there. And Elijah is very close in the one passage too in 1 Kings. This is as close as it comes to somebody truly seeing the face of God. And there's a few strands that you can pull on when you think about Moses and that connection. You can pull on covenant, because this is a part of a covenant renewal as the people have broken the covenant, but God still, even though he seemingly is unpredictable a little bit in this passage, he still maintains that covenant and reissues the new covenant to his people, even though they've broken it. And we have here Moses as mediator, stand between God and the people, and we could pull on that thread as we think about Jesus' role in offering us salvation through the mediation of his blood. We also have the revelation of Yahweh's glory and his name and what makes up him as a character and what he is as a person, and that's the aspect I'd like to focus on as we continue contemplate what this means to see God. And we have this in verse 20, "No one can see my face and live." And often when people talk about seeing God, it gets pushed to the end where we will truly see God in the consummation of all things in the new heavens and new earth, and that's is referenced in Revelation 22:4, where the people will see actually God's face. However, I'd like to point, as I often do, to a little closer aspect of the situation, and that is to see Jesus is to see God, as he talks about the kingdom of heaven unfolding, as he is describing what it means to be part of his kingdom as he comes to earth, is to see Jesus is to see God. And in this longing for the new covenant, we have Jeremiah 31:33, where it describes the covenant being written on the people's hearts, that they may truly be able to worship him and follow after him. And this is what the people were longing for. And Jesus is saying, now it's here in the kingdom of heaven. To be pure in heart, to be one who follows me, will mean you are shaped by my presence and that you will reflect my image. You will see God through seeing me. The kingdom of heaven is here. Jesus, the very image of God, is before you. To see God is to see Jesus. And that the second point that we have here from Moses, which I think corresponds well to this passage, is to see the presence of God, to see his face, to see his glory, means to be changed by that encounter, by seeing him. Moses' appearance is changed in this encounter with Yahweh. He sees his glory, and that is on page 132, and I'd like to read chapter 34, verses 29 to 35, which describes what happens to Moses in this encounter as his face is quite literally changed. "When Moses came down from Mount Sinai carrying the two stone tablets inscribed with the terms of the covenant, he wasn't aware that his face had become radiant because he had spoken to the Lord. So when Aaron and the people of Israel saw the radiance of Moses' face, they were afraid to come near him. But Moses called out to them and asked Aaron and all the leaders of the community to come over, and he talked with them. Then all the people of Israel approached him, and Moses gave them the instructions the Lord had given him on Mount Sinai. When Moses finished speaking with them, he covered his face with a veil. But whenever he went into the tent of meeting to speak with the Lord, he would remove the veil until he came out again. Then he would give the people whatever instructions the Lord had given him, and the people of Israel would see the radiant glow of his face. So he would put a veil over his face until he returned to speak with the Lord." To see God, to see him, is to be changed by him. And in this incident with between Moses and Yahweh, it confirms for the people that Moses was in the presence of God, that he had seen God, that he'd been speaking with him. Moses has said at different points as he spoke with God with this intimate, close connection that nobody else had happened to him, or had happened to them. And it's this cycle with pure in heart to see God and to be changed by seeing God and then being more pure in heart. It's a cycle of pressing into the character of God and being continually changed by his presence, that we are made more and more like him. Moses reflected the image of God to the people that had changed his radiant face. Jesus is the image of God, revealing his character, revealing the kingdom of heaven, revealing what it means to be made in the image of God. And we are called to be made in the image of Christ and then to reflect that into the world. So coming back a little bit to being pure in heart, to focus in on what the heart of the covenant, the heart of relationship with God, always was intended to be, which is displayed fully in Christ and reflected in his image. As Jesus says along the Sermon on the Mount, and this idea of being pure in heart is further described as Jesus talks about what it means to follow after him, what it means that the kingdom of heaven has come. He says, don't just not murder, which is part of the covenant. But also, Jesus says, don't lash out in anger and hate. Seek reconciliation with those around you. He says, don't just not commit adultery, but don't allow the thought of it to capture your heart. Don't just love your friends, but love your enemies. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. And I don't believe I've appealed to Paul this summer, and I have purposely tried not to, but to allow the Gospels to shape our conversation. But today, I couldn't resist it, because Galatians 5, 22 and 23, the passages of the fruit in the Spirit, are just so good and relate so well to the idea of being pure in heart and what it means to be shaped by the character of Jesus. So Galatians 5, 22 and 23. But the Holy Spirit produces this kind of fruit in our lives. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. There is no law against these things. Living into these things, living into the characterizations of what it means to be in the kingdom of heaven, become habit-forming and become character-building. Comes the nature of those who are living out what it means to be part of the kingdom of heaven and what it means to be under the lordship of Christ. It is wonderful news, as Tom Wright translates the blessed part in the Beatitudes, because those who are pure in heart, those who have the covenant written on their hearts, those who are living in a way that reflects the character of Jesus, reflects the character of Yahweh, will be able to recognize Jesus, recognize that his kingdom has come and be able to join with and partner with him in what's happening. For us, we're invited to live as well into this kingdom, to live into what it means to be pure in heart, what it means to be shaped by the fruits of the Spirit, what it means to have an encounter with God and then be changed by him and reflect truly his image in the world, to continue on this cycle of being pure in heart, of seeing God being changed by his image, and then being pure in heart, this character-forming shape of what it means to be part of the kingdom of heaven. To see God is to be changed by him. The table is a signpost of what it means to see Jesus, what it means to be in the presence of Yahweh, what it means to come around his image, his glory, and to be transformed and be shaped by that. It's an opportunity to come and experience the body and the blood and the of Christ, and then to allow that through the Holy Spirit to change our lives, to help us to continue on to live in love and joy and peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control, to live into that. And we come together each week as a community to encourage one another. We come together each week as a community to gather around the table to allow the life-giving presence to shape us, to shape us into the character of Jesus to those who are part of the kingdom of heaven, and to allow that encounter to reflect the image of the Lord's glory in the world, in the places we find ourselves.